I'm going to skip over Yom Kippur because I want to go straight to Sukkot. Nothing against Yom Kippur, just I want to talk about Sukkot, and the way it works out is Yom Kippur. So I covered Yom Kippur by some Gedalia. So we're just advancing ahead, and there's something I want to talk about Chol HaMoed next Thursday. So I have everything planned out. Hopefully it works out. What I want to talk about is when you walk into the store to buy an esrog, and you see the esrogim are divided by different companies, so to speak, different brands of esrogim. This is Chazon Ish's famous, Chabad, Braverman, all these different types of labels. What is going on with these esrogim? And does it matter? You see an esrog is in the $100 price range, so does it matter which one is which? What's the story behind the history of the esrog as it is? And perhaps is there a preference at the end of the day? Really what this revolves around is the topic of murkav, of grafting of esrogim. The entire issue comes around is what you're holding in your hand an actual esrog, or is it something else that's been grafted? Now, to discuss this, we're going to go through a very broad and very, very interesting sugya. There is also a lot of history connected to this discussion. But to interplay the history with the halacha is going to become very confusing to keep track of all the names. So we're going to keep the history perhaps for another time. Maybe we'll discuss that over Sukkot, one day over Yom Tov, whatever it is. But we're going to discuss now the issue of, does your esrog have to be 100% genetically an esrog back from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu? And is that even possible? So let's begin. The Torah says, on Sukkot we have to take a Priyat Hadar. And what is a Priyat Hadar is the big discussion. The Perush of the Priyat Hadar, we know, is an esrog. So the Gemara in Sukkah Daf Lamed Hey, where this entire discussion is found, finds clues in the words of Priyat Hadar. Doesn't say Priyat Hadar is esrog. It finds hints to the idea of what a Priyat Hadar is, this type of fruit. It should have, trees should be able to grow fruits at different stages, all times of the year. You should have a fruit that is, you know, very mature, very young. That's one sign of the type of fruit it is at the same time. It has to grow on a tree for more than one season. It needs a lot of water. And this, using this description that Chazal find, based on the drushes of Priyat Hadar, comes out to be the esrog that we know and love. Now, what is the halacha if an esrog is grafted with another fruit? Most obviously, a lemon. That's the one we would assume. Why would you want to do that? Because the esrog tree that we know is in fact very weak. It is not a strong tree. Esrog trees last, if there's no grafting at all, esrog trees only last for 8 to 10 years on their own. If you graft it with something else, there used to be these things, they used to graft with something called like a sour orange, different types of citruses, it strengthens the trunk of the tree and allows it to get a lot further for the buck that you put into it. And therefore, it's business-wise, it makes sense to graft it. Now, is that a problem if I graft it and strengthen it with other types of fruit in order to strengthen the esrog?
Just curious, what is the more fundamental? Is the esrog
So the Rambam famously writes in his Hakdama to the Perush HaMishnayos that esrog is Perush HaMikubalim, that this is the understood pshat of the word of Priyat Hadar all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu.
So the characteristics are just nismachim.
Correct. The characteristics are simanim. We'll return to the idea of simanim later on. So this is important to know. There is no source anywhere in Shas, anywhere in Chazal that talks about grafting of esrogs and sukkahs. They don't discuss it. There's no source even in Rishonim. Not even the Rishonim talk about the issue of can you use an esrog that is grafted with something else. It would indicate that an esrog murkav perhaps is pasul, meaning they don't even have to say it. Or maybe it's fine. However, the Tshuvas HaRamah, which is actually the first source, the first time we find ever the discussion of grafting an esrog as it appears regarding the holiday of Sukkot, is a tshuva of the Ramah that discusses the status of an esrog morkav, this grafted esrog. In this tshuva, he's responding to Rav Shmuel Yehuda Katzen Ellenbogen, who says that an esrog morkav, the grafted esrog, is not called Priyat Hadar. That's not what the Torah is referring to. And in addition, we have the tshuva Teshuvas the Ma'aram al Shech and Simon Kufyud, which we're going to discuss at length. He was asked about an Esrog Murkav and the Bracha on such an Esrog. The Lavush, we'll talk about that in a moment as well, also says it's a puzzle, and this is cited by the Magen Avraham. The Tshuvas Habach has a Tshuva, where he writes to the Sma, which is a famous commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. The Sma says an Esrog Murkav is puzzle as well. The Taz, this is all in Simon Tafresh Mem Tes and Shulchan Aruch, also says it's puzzle, and this is what the Mishnah Berurah cites the Halacha. It's just interesting, this is a very, very important question. We find no discussion in Chazal or in the Rishonim. It only appears by the Ramah. So the main source that discusses the issues is the Tshuvas of the Ma'aram al-Shech in Simen Kuf Yud. And he brings, not one, but six reasons why an Esrog Murkav is possible, why a grafted Esrog is no good. And he explains why it's done. He goes through the whole history, why the Esrog is weak by itself, and why someone would want to do this. And these are the six reasons. We're going to go through all six reasons, and by each one we're going to also cite the critiques of that reason. So we're going to do everything at once. The first reason is based on the Gemara in Sota. The Gemara in Sota says that the Pasuk famously says in Dvarim that if you planted a new tree, a new vineyard, a new orchard, you're allowed to go back home. You don't have to fight in battle because it's not fair that you're going to put all this work into plant all this stuff. The person is going to get killed in battle and someone else is going to use your stuff. So the Gemara, the halacha is in the Torah that if you planted something new, you are allowed to go back home. You don't have to fight in battle. The Gemara says, what is the Kohen coming to exclude? What's excluded that it has to use this expression of the lochilu, you didn't use it? What is something that you would not have to go home for? So the Gemara says, if someone grafts a tree, if someone violates the Torah prohibition of grafting two fruits together, he did something wrong, and therefore he's not allowed to be exempt from battle anymore. That is something that's not included in the exemption from battle. The Gemara now goes on to decide, how is it possible that you would do such a thing, and is it possible to graft a tree that would not be usher? Is it possible to graft trees together that would not be usher according to the Torah? That's how the Gemara gets involved in this discussion. So the Gemara says, if you're grafting two young trees together, two baby trees together, then why do we need to talk about grafting at all? You have baby trees. You're exempt from battle. So it can't be that's the case we're talking about, because two baby trees on their own, even if I don't graft them together, they're new trees. I can go home and enjoy the future produce of the tree. Then the Gemara says, if you're grafting a new tree onto an old tree, a yalda onto a zakena, you take the branch, a young branch, and what they do is they would carve out a hole in the trunk and they would stick it into an old trunk, and that's how they would get it to graft on. If you're doing something like that, the Gemara says, then this is not called murkav. This is not called grafting, says the Gemara. Because when you take a young bud, a young branch, and you stick it onto an old tree, the new branch is batel. It becomes nullified to the old tree. It's not considered grafting. It's just considered making it the old tree. That's what the Gemara says. If I take an old apple tree, and I take a young, I don't even know if this is possible, but I take a young orange branch, and I graft it into the old tree, it now becomes a shame apple tree, according to the Gemara here in Sota. So, that point that we care about, if I take something, and I put it onto something old, it becomes nullified to the tree. So the Ma'aram al-Shech learns from this point that if you are mechazik, if you strengthen the esrog branch to a lemon trunk, then what does the esrog branch become? It becomes a lemon. So he says, we see from here, if I want to strengthen my weak esrog branch and I put it onto the lemon trunk, I've now made it a lemon. It is no longer an esrog, he says. And therefore, it's obvious that a lemon branch that's attached to the esrog trunk produces lemons, he says. And therefore, it's all going to be batel, he says.
Originally, if a lemon attached to an esrog should make...
He says that's obvious because lemons are going to sprout out of the branch. The chiddush is if I take the esrog branch and I put it onto the lemon trunk, the Gemara is telling me that it's batel. It's nullified, even though it may be, it look like a lemon, smell like a lemon, talk like a lemon, come out as a lemon, but since it becomes part of, all that regarding an esrog, once I attach it now to a lemon tree, it is batel, it's nullified to the tree.
Why don't we take similar to the laws of take, like an animal inside an animal and stuff like that?
These are the laws by Kalayim.
Oh, so you're saying it's not the same?
These are the laws of Kalayim. So that's proof number one.
So you can't compare the two.
Can't compare the two. So this is a proof number one, he says. Grafting makes it whatever the bigger tree is, the older tree is. It's not an Esrog, it's a lemon. So comes the Beis Ephraim, and the Beis Ephraim writes in Siman Nun Vav, and he says this concept of being batel is only when it's min bamino, when it's two species that are just like one another. They're very similar. Grafting two of the same species that are similar. However, when is it usher to graft together? When you graft two separate items, we view the final product as really two separate entities, imbalanced in one. If I take an apple and an orange, which are two different types of species, the new thing is an apple and an orange. It's not batel anymore. It's only batel when the two things are similar to one another. And he cites this, citing the Maharsha, and he cites the tshuva of the Eisan Ezrachi, who allows using an Esther of Morkov if it matches anything in the description of the Gemara in Sukkah. If it needs a lot of water and it's on the tree for multiple times of the year, he says there's no such thing as, there's no issue of grafting. And the Beis Ephraim says maybe grafting is not so bad. If it's two things that are similar to each other, then it's not so bad to graft them together. The Shvus Yaakov in a Shuv in Chelek Aleph says that when it comes to Orla and returning from battle, so we have a concept that the young branch is nullified to the older trunk. That makes sense. That's a halacha specific to Orla and returning from battle, he says. These are specific drashos, and we have rules that if you have two chidushim in two areas of the Torah, it only appears in two concepts, then you're not allowed to learn that out to other areas. That's called shnei ksuvim abayim ke'echad. So says the Tshuva Shvus Yaakov, since we only find two areas in the entire Torah where the Torah explicitly says that if I take a young branch, it's nullified to the older trunk, it only applies over there, but it doesn't apply to Esrog, he says. And therefore, they knock away the Maharam al-Sheikh. He doesn't think that that's a proof. Fine. The Maharam al-Sheikh then brings the second reason why grafting is a problem for the Esrog. Even according to those who say that an Esrog branch doesn't become batel to the lemon tree, so he says this is no different than the concept of chetzi eved chetzi ben chorin. If you have a slave that's owned by two people, and one master frees the slave, so what's the status of the slave now? Well, he's half free and he's half slave. It's this weird mix. So this esrog, he says, is the same thing. It's half and half, and therefore it's not an esrog. It's lacking in. It's being an esrog. It's half lemon. It's half something else. It's not an esrog, he says, and therefore another reason why it shouldn't be an esrog. Three, he says an esrog that's owned by two people and it's not totally given over, you have a partnership. Two people own an esrog. If the one person doesn't totally give it over to his partner for use on Sukkos, so then it's a problem because it's not all his. The esrog has to be totally yours. You can't use a half-owned esrog. He says if it's not kulo esrog, then it's not kosher. This esrog is not entirely esrog. It's something else. It's lemon plus esrog. It's esrog plus something else. And therefore, he says another reason why grafting is a problem. Now, this brings us to the tshuvas of the Savak Hadisha, Rav Shmuel Alefandri, who is the great Sephardic rabbi of Yerushalayim. So he writes in Chela Gimel, in Simen Yud Beis, he says that the Gemara in Chula and Daf Ayin Tes tells us that the halacha is that a mother and a child are not allowed to be slaughtered on the same day. It's called osov yespino. The halacha is you can't take a mother cow, a mother sheep, whatever it is, and slaughter it the same day as the child. That's the halacha. However, if, let's say, the child comes from two different animals, let's say a sheep and another animal got together and they had a baby, and now it's a kalim, it's a mixture of two different animals. So the halacha is, in such a case, that it's still usher to do it. It's still usher to slaughter the mother and the child, even if the father or the father is a different species. So this is based on a drasha. It says, afilu miktsas se. Even if it is a little bit of a sheep, even if it's slight, even if they share some genetic if they're related genetically in some way, even if it's not totally the same animal, it's still usher to do it. So says Rosh Shlomo Alefandri, the Sabak Hadisha, so you need as well, you need a pri. You need to take pri etadar. You can also take miktsas pri, a little bit like an esrog. You're allowed to take esrog and something that's a little bit like an esrog as well. The same thing here as well. You're not allowed to slaughter the mother and the child. even if the mother and child are a little bit the same, so too by Esrog, you're not allowed, you're supposed to take a Priyat Hadar, and even if it is a little bit like an Esrog.
It's going to be different because it's still the mother's child. It doesn't matter what it looks like.
Yeah.
It's also up to know.
He wants to make, he's making a drusha.
Okay.
He's making a drusha. Yeah.
Simplicity also, no, you see the mother's child. Right?
The same thing as well. Correct. Four. He says the shear of Esrog, the Esrog of the halachas has to be the size of a kibetza. That's the halacha in the Mishnayos and Sukkah. If there's lemon in, mixed with my Esrog, then it's not a kibetza, it's not an egg's worth of Esrog. It's something else. There's a mix. The lemon is taking over the personality of the Esrog. It's not totally a kibetza's worth of Esrog. There's lemon mixed into it, he says. Reason number four. Five, he says. You need lakicha tama for the esrog. The esrog has to be complete. If the esrog is missing any part of it, it's no good. The esrog is no good. If there's chunks taken out of the esrog, it's no good. So therefore as well, he wants to say over here, am I holding a complete esrog in my hand on Sukkos? No. My esrog is filled with chunks of lemon. I can't see them, but there is a reality that this is not entirely a complete esrog that I'm holding in my hand. The Gemara says that kalayim is puzzle for the mizbeach. I can't take an animal that is the product of two different animals and use it for the mizbeach. That's the halach, right? Sheep and a cow have a baby. I can't use that for the mizbeach in the Beis HaMikdash. But why do you need a drasha to exclude kalayim if every animal, as you know, has to be tamim? Every animal has to be complete. And it has to be, can't be lacking in any physical way. It would seem that you can have to, you can in fact have kalayim and still be tumen. Meaning, just because it's the mixture of two different products doesn't mean it's lacking in any way. That's an attack on the Ma'aram al-Sheikh. Six. This is the sixth reason, the final reason of the Ma'aram al-Sheikh. He says the esrog has to be a certain shape. That's the rule. The esrog has to be a certain shape. For example, the Gemara says, you're not allowed to take an esrog bud and put a something around it that it grows like in the shape of a ball. Not allowed to alter the shape. It has to grow in its natural shape. For example, nowadays we know you can go to Japan and buy those watermelons that are grown in a square. They take the watermelon, they put it in a box, and it grows the shape of a square. You can get square watermelons. You can't do that to an esrog. That is a lack of tsura of the way the esrog should appear in its form. So he says, is this an esrog tsura? No, he says. The lemon is in the esrog. It's lacking the tsura, the physicality of the esrog, because now it has a lemon taking up its space as an esrog. These are all ways to kind of diminish the idea that what I'm holding in my hand is not an esrog. Now, the Saba Kadisha argues on that. He says that if the esrog murkav looks like an esrog, tastes like an esrog, smells like an esrog, then it has tsura sa esrog. How are you going to know the difference? Because it has lemon DNA in there? It looks and acts and does everything like an esrog. So it has the image of an esrog, he says. Those are the 6 points and some of the critiques of the Ma'aram al-Sheikh. Comes to the Lavush. The Lavush brings a 7th reason. Why? This is a big chiddush. He says, in esrog morkav, a grafted esrog, was it mutter? Were you allowed to make that esrog in the first place? No, you're not allowed to graft two things together, he says. In Avera, a sin was done to make this esrog. And even if a non-Jew did it, even if a non-Jew did the grafting and you went to bought it from a non-Jew, there's an opinion in the Gemara that says that a non-Jew is forbidden in grafting as well. Now we know that kalayim, if I take a mixture of two things...
We eat it.
What?
We do eat it.
We don't follow that opinion. He's just citing like, you know, he's trying to build his case. So he says, we know that kalayim, if I take an animal that's mixture of two different animals, it's puzzle legavoa. It's puzzle to put on the mizbech. Why, says the Gemara? Because it's disgusting. You're taking something that was made through an avera and you're going to put it on the mizbech? How could you do such a thing? Therefore, he says, the esrog that's grafted is also puzzle. You're going to take this abomination of the will of God, where you took two different things together you're not supposed to do, and you're going to use it for a mitzvah, he says? That's terrible. How could you do such a thing? Now, it would come out, there's a kula in the Lavush. This is not for right now. It does have practical implications. The kula would be that if I took an esrog, if I grafted an esrog in a lemon, and I took the seed from that, and then I planted a tree, and then I took an esrog from that, it would be okay. Because you're allowed to partake of grafted things. So once I take the seed from that esrog that I wasn't supposed to make by grafting with a lemon, and I plant it. And then I grow a tree from it. And I take the esrog from that, it's fine. It's perfectly fine.
So once you have recovery, you can do it first place. That it should be
correct. Once the grafting all takes place, I can then use it afterwards. So once I have a baby from the grafting, it's okay. This is very important because one of the leniencies they wanted to use in Eretz Yisrael in the 20th century, in the days of Rav Kook and the Chazon Ish, and Rav Kook fought against this, Rav Kook did not like this, was to take the seeds of grafted esrogim, to plant them, and then to sell esrogim from that. Rav Kook was very much against it, the Chazon Ish was against it as well, but we'll save that for perhaps the historical issue another time. What's the attack on the Levush? Why is Levush problematic? Comes the Magen Avraham, and the Magen Avraham argues, and he says, the psul of Kalayim is by Korbanos. We don't learn the laws of Korbanos out to anything else. Korbanos is its own realm. We don't learn halachas of Korbanos to other areas. So he says, don't tell me about putting, you know, Kalayim on the Mizbeach. Number one. The Magen Avraham then says, if the product of Kalayim is pasul for mitzvos, if it's true that if I shouldn't use things that are grafted together for mitzvos, then it would come out that you shouldn't use a shofar of a ram that comes from Kalayim. If a ram and another animal have a child together, I shouldn't be allowed to use the shofar of such a ram, because that's Kalayim. We find no such halacha, we find no such concept anywhere that I can't use the shofar of Kalayim, use such a horn. Number two. Three, the Taz cites a Gemara in Sukkah, which says that if you buy a ravos, you buy a ravos for sukkahs from a non-Jew, you must ask the non-Jew to cut them. You cannot cut them yourself. Why? Because there was a chazaka, there was a established principle that the non-Jews would sometimes steal land and they would sell the willow branches for the ravos as if it was their own. If you cut it, so you're going to be stealing from the land. But if the non-Jew cuts it, combined with the fact that he's doing the work, and there's Yeush, the owner of the property, perhaps will have given up on getting his willow branches back. So in such a case, then you're allowed to do it. Now, we don't want you to be the one who's going to be stealing, but if the non-Jew steals, then technically you're allowed to benefit from it as well. So the Taz says, it seems that we're not worried about the fact that Averos came about through the Avera of a non-Jew. Why are we not concerned? If the Levush is tearing his hair out, you shouldn't even use the grafted esrog that a non-Jew makes. Why not? I'm allowed to use the Aravos that the non-Jew stole. It's not great, but I'm allowed to use them. So how come that's not a problem, he says. And therefore, he says that he's wrong. Now, the Tshuvas Shaul Umeshiv in Madura Dalid, he defends the Levush and explains he doesn't mean that every product is pasul if it comes to an Avera, only if the product is obvious in appearance and it stands out, and he wants to kind of, you know, soften the Levush. Nevertheless, the Levush is problematic as well. What's the eighth reason why grafting is a problem? So the Taz says the esrog is pasul for a different reason. The Gemara in Sukkah Lamed Vav says that an esrog that is almost black is pasul. If it's so dark green that it almost looks black, it is pasul, because that's not an esrog. It's doma l'esrog. It's like an esrog. It's not an esrog, it is only like an esrog. We see that if something is pasul because it is similar, then that's considered a psul. Is an esrog more kav an esrog? Is a grafted esrog and a real esrog? No, what is it? It's doma l'esrog. It is like an esrog. So the Taz wants to say a grafted esrog is no good because it's not an esrog. It is only like an esrog. So the Taz asks about this and he says that, you know, maybe this isn't the case. He cites a Gemara in Sukkah that says if you can't find an esrog at all, perhaps you should take another fruit. So you don't forget about doing the mitzvah. One year, there's no esrogim around. You don't have anything else, so take a banana. Got to have something. I don't want to forget to do the mitzvah next year, so I'll take a banana this year. This will be my pre-Eitz Hadar. So the Gemara says you can't do that. You can only take an esrog. So the Rush on the Gemara says, why is the only suggestion to take another fruit? Why does the Gemara say, if there's no kosher esrog in that year, what should you do? Take a pasul esrog. Take a bad esrog. Well, that's better than taking a banana. Right?
Because you don't want to do the proper thing. You It's one thing to do something. Nobody's going to say that a banana is property. Doing it, why don't you start doing something that's close?
Good. So the Rush says that a person who cannot find an esrog, once they say something that is, you know, clear in what he's doing. He wants to say something that's going to be clear. And then he goes on to say that what's better, to take an esrog that's bad or a perfect banana? He says, you want to take something that's shalom, you want to take something that is, you know, beautiful. It's better to take a beautiful banana, he says. So the Taz asks on this whole discussion, the Taz says, why didn't the Gemara suggest to take an esrog murkav? Why didn't the Gemara say, if you don't have a good esrog this year, take a grafted esrog? So the Taz says it must be that an esrog murkav is kosher. An esrog murkav, a grafted esrog, is good, and even a grafted esrog wasn't available. That must have been the case. There weren't even grafted esrogim available. And the Taz wants to say, maybe we should say that an esrog murkav is good. He concludes, you shouldn't use a grafted esrog because of lekicha tama. I'm not really taking a perfect esrog. I'm taking something that's lacking in some way. And he says, this applies all of Yontif, and you have to be careful about this. Okay, so those are the arguments why we should not use grafted esrogim. Now, who is the only real makel at the end of the day? The only real makel is the Saba Kaddish of Yerushalayim. Listen to what he says. He listened to a fantastic chiddush. He says, the Torah tells you should take what? Not an esrog, you should take a pre-Eitz Hadra. That's what the Torah says. The description includes something that's on a tree from year to year, and a lemon is on a tree from year to year. A lemon does that as well. And who says that a lemon and an esrog is kalayim? Why do you think that's kalayim? They're so similar. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Kalayim that if two fruits are similar to each other and their leaves are similar to each other, then it's not kalayim. It's not grafting, says the Saba Kaddisha. That would certainly apply to the esrog and the lemon. So he says, point number one, a lemon is an esrog, he says. It's not something else. It looks like an esrog. It acts like it. It does everything else. Why shouldn't it be kosher as well as pre-Eitz Hadar? And then he asks, where does it say that a lemon isn't an esrog? In reality, the esrog and lemon are the same thing, he says. They're just different types of the same thing. One is Granny Smith, one is Red Delicious, but they're both pre-Eitz Hadar. And just because someone calls it a lemon doesn't mean it's not an esrog. That is a very big chiddush. So when you see someone carrying a lemon, or a kid walking around with a lemon on Sukkot, it might not be so off, according to the Saba Kaddisha. Now, you shouldn't do that. That is not lahalacha, but it's certainly an interesting approach. It's definitely the most lenient approach. The Beis Ephraim, Rav Ephraim Zalman Margolios, questions the approach, and he makes a very strong point. He says, if someone were to discover a technique that would enable any tree to grow fruit for more than one season, and it could do all the things that the esrog is supposed to do according to the Gemara, would that be kosher for the mitzvah? So he says that the Ramban and the Ritva in Sukkah explain that Hadar means esrog. He says we're all understanding the Sukkah improperly. Pre-Eitz Hadar means a pre-Eitz that is a esrog. It doesn't mean beautiful. Hadar means esrog. That's how the Ritva and the Ramban learn the Pasuk. There was never a doubt what the proper fruit was. We always knew what it was from the time of Moshe down through Chazal all the way through. The descriptions of the Gemara and Sukkah are meant to support what we already know. This is what the esrog looks like. We know what the esrog is. It is the pre-Eitz Hadar. This is the understanding of the Rambam, as we said it before. There's no disagreement about the fact that it has to take an esrog. The Ramban al Torah in Sefer Vayikra says that esrog is the Aramaic for the Hebrew fruit that is called Hadar. There's no doubt, he says to the Saba Kaddisha. It's not that, oh, whatever is yellow and smells citrusy is an esrog. We know exactly what the esrog is. It's the same thing for the last 3,000 years, 4,000 years. Nothing has changed. What we're talking about is a description of what it is. It can't be simply anything that you want to be that is citrusy. Next. In the next tshuva, so the Saba Kaddisha responds to all the angry mail that he got about the first tshuva, which he said you could use a lemon. And he writes back and he says, that was halacha v'lo lemaisa. It was just theoretical talk. I don't think anybody should take a lemon. And he was only responding to points and learning, but he would never say to use an esrog that's murkav, a grafted esrog, or use a lemon as well. However, What do we do? So that would come out halacha. Lamaisa, this is why we need to make sure we have an esrog. We'll get to the species in a moment. Now, what if there's no esrog available? Should you use an esrog morkav at the end of the day? So the tshuva is for Rama says you can use and make a bracha with it. B'shas hachak, the Bach says as well, and the Panim Iros also says this. The Mishnah Berurah says you should never make a bracha on an esrog morkav, and it shouldn't even be used at all. And he says people may lead to using grafted esrogim as well. And the Chassam Sofer writes in the Drushas as well that there is no esrog kasher, you may not use an esrog morkav. So that's not really an issue nowadays, as we'll see right now, because what we're about to discuss right now is the idea of what's on those boxes. All of those boxes that you pick up by the esrog seller is simply telling you that this is not a grafted esrog. A hechsher on an esrog is not telling you that the esrog is kosher. It's not telling you that there's no marks on it that are problematic, that there's nothing wrong with the ukits or the pitom. That's not what it's telling you. The hechsher is telling you that it is not morkav. That's all a hechsher is doing. There's not a rabbi sitting in some room in Yerushalayim or Bnei Brak looking everything with a jeweler's loop to make sure that your esrog in America is good. It's only telling you that it comes from a tree that they checked it to make sure the tree is not morkav. Okay? That's why, so when you buy it, the person will go to the rabbi to look at it, whatever it is, you have to look at it yourself. Certainly, they're not going to sell you something that looks like garbage because they want to sell it. But that's what a hechsher is doing. There's just a fascinating story in the Tshuvas of the Shvus Yaakov and Chelek Aleph and Lamed Vav. This is just a great story, so we're going to tell it before we get to the different species in a moment. He records a story that in Prague, they brought esrogim morkavim, they bought grafted esrogs 1 year, and the rabbanim said, you shouldn't make a brach on it. They bought them, and they said, don't make a brach on it. So some of the people wanted to make a brach on it. They were so convinced this is the right thing, that they made a big tumult in the community. The Shach, the famous Shach, was visiting Yantif in Prague that year. And they went to the Shach, they made a big tumult, and they convinced the Shach that to say that you should make a bracha on these grafted esrogim. So they came to Shul, that Yantif, the Chazan gets up to say Hallel, and they start screaming, you got to make a bracha, what's wrong with you? Even though it's a grafted esrog, we make a bracha on it, and these people are making everybody crazy. The Chazan gets very flustered, and he drops the esrog, and it becomes pasul. So, no problem solved, no more bracha. So the Shach regretted this psak before his passing, and he wrote that because he decided against the Rabbanim of Prague when he was only a guest in the city, and he went against the Rabbanim, he did the wrong thing, and he took back his psak about the bracha. So this was something that shook the Shach to the very end of his life. Let's talk now about the different things. Again, we're not going to go into the history, because it's too broad and confusing for right now. We'll just give some background to some of the names. For many years, the Chazon Ish was initially a fan of Teimani Esrogim. We'll discuss that later on. At a certain point, he had a question about them. So he sent Rav Yaakov Halperin to either Tzfas or Shechem, the tradition of where the good Esrogim are from the Galil in the north, to find a pure Esrog. The Chazon Ish felt that a wild Esrog grown was a clean Esrog. He took 3 seeds from the Esrog. He gave one to Rav Gedalia Nadel, one to Rav Shmuel Greinman, and one to Rav Michal Lefkowitz. And they all planted their own trees from that Esrog of the Chazon Ish. And that's all you'll find, Chazon Ish, Greinman, Esrogim, hyphenated Greinman, or you'll find Chazon Ish Lefkowitz, meaning they all come from that brand of the Chazon Ish. So again, the Chazon Ish gave a tradition that the Esrogim from these trees, and they sprouted off into orchards now. There are thousands of Esrogim trees that come from that single Esrog of the Chazon Ish, are good, they're built to Murkov, they are not going to be grafted. Moroccan Esrogim are known to have good Yichas as well, that come from Northern Africa. They also have a strong Masora. There's something called Braverman Esrogim, which were used by the Maral Diskin. There was a gentleman whose last name was Braverman, and he started a pardes, an orchard, based on an Esrog that the Maral Diskin had as well. Esrog Chabad. Chabad Esrogim are famous because they have a gartel in the middle. It gets pinched in the middle. This goes back to a Masora that the Baal HaTanya used this type of species of esrog. The first Shulchan Acharav had such an esrog like this, and therefore in Chabad it's very popular. There's something you also find called esroge badats. So those are developed by a person who strengthened an esrog tree with a non-fruit-bearing tree. He put an esrog on a ilan srak, a non-fruit-bearing tree, and that strengthened the character of the tree, but obviously didn't impart any fruit to it. And the Chazon Ish didn't like these esrogim. The Badats did like these esrogim. There's a whole history, again, with the Chazon Ish and Rav Kook and the Badats of which esrogim should be used or shouldn't be used. But those are all esrogim in which they claim that their yichus is showing you a good esrog. I want to discuss, just in the next 5 minutes, is esrogei teiman, Yemenite esrogim, because they are not just about yichus, but they are characteristically different than other esrogim. The Shari Aaron writes that the Chazon Ish would use esrogim that were from Teiman, even though he had his own tree. It's unclear, something switched at some point, but he used Teimani esrogim. The Chazon Ish said, other esrogim are good for cooking, but only Yemenite esrogim are good for mitzvos. That's what the Chazon Ish would say. The Shevet Halevi, Rav Ozner, would use a Yemenite esrog. Rav Agio Seif would use an esrog Teiman. Rav Harfinus writes in his Priyat Hadar that the Brisker Rav would use an esrog Teiman as well. And Rav Shechter uses a Teimani esrog. So what is it about the Yemenite esrog that is so exciting? The Gemara in Sukkah and Daf Lamed Vav is again discussing esrogim. The Gemara, without going into the gory details, the Gemara wants to know, is there anything that would be that would make an animal treif that would also make an esrog treif? It's a strange question. A cow is a cow with lungs, and an esrog is an esrog. What does that have to do with anything? So the Gemara says, what I mean is as follows. The Gemara says, if the flesh around the cow's lungs liquefies, that is a trefa for the cow. Without the pictures, there's something wrong about the, around the flesh around the cow's lungs, it becomes a trefa. That's the shita, that's one shita. And Rav Yochanan said that the animal is still kasher, the animal is still good. So Rava comes and says about this idea, that's only when the lungs are still intact to the bronchial tubes of the animal. That the tubes of the animal's esophagus and bronchial tubes are still running and they're still intact in the animal. So in the parallel case with the esrog, that was all about an animal. So the parallel case with the esrog, the flesh is liquefied, but the seeds, which are the equivalent to the blood vessels in the lungs, are still intact. That's what we're talking about. If you have a place where the inside is all mushy, but the seeds remain intact, encased inside. So the question is, do we view the fact that the esrog is exposed in some type of way as rendering it rotten, or does it make a difference or not? Whatever. You're never going to see an esrog like that, that rots to such a situation. That's not the point. But we see from the Gemara here, and this is what they want to pull out, that an esrog should have tubes or holes in it like a lung. An esrog should have a cavity where the seeds sit. So Rashi writes, Chedrei zera shehagareinim betochan. The esrog should have a cavity in which the seeds sit inside the cavity, away from the flesh of the esrog. The idea is that they're air pockets with seeds, and the esrog that's how the esrog should be. This is what Tosis writes. Tosis Rabbeinu Peretz, Rabbeinu Yeruchim, the Rush and Sukkah, the Yerushalmi, the Sfas Emes all say this. The only esrog that has seeds like this is an esrog teiman, a Yemenite esrog. A Yemenite esrog is the proper description of what the Gemara calls of seeds encased in a tube with the esrog around it. Every year, I cut up on my esrog to make sure it looks like that inside, to make sure it's like that. Every single year, it's the same thing. It's a tube with the seeds all packed together. It looks like nothing else. It doesn't look like a lemon inside. And this is the proof that the Yemenites want to bring, that their esrog is the esrog of the days of the Gemara. The Chubas Harama, the Magen Avram, the Mamluwes and Parshas Emor all say that a grafted esrog has a lot of mutz, a lot of pulp inside of it. Esrogei Teiman have no pulp. Very little pulp. It's very little pulp inside of there. It's more dry inside. Another proof that it could be the right esrog. The Magen Avraham also says the seeds of the esrog should be vertically aligned with the height of the esrog. The seeds should face the direction of the esrog. We only find that with esrogei teiman. Others, the seeds are perpendicular to the flesh of the esrog. That's another proof. In addition, Rashi in Sukkah says it should take 2 to 3 years for the tree to produce. Same thing with Esrogei Teiman. Esrogei Teiman, the Esrog is supposed to go so large it can be carried on the shoulders. We know famously Yamada Esrogs can do that as well. The Medrash Rabba says the Esrog is sweet and can be eaten raw without cooking. Shas, in many places we find as well, the Esrog could be taken a bite out of. Esrogei Teiman have a sweetness to it that we don't find by the other Esrogim. And these proofs together is what the Yemenites hold makes their Esrog the right Esrog. Regardless of all the Masorah and the traditions, things like that, they say this is the right one as well. So for many Rabbanim and many people, they search out for a Yemenite Esrog every year because of the descriptions in the Gemara. And I have the person who sells me my Esrogs, he is very...
In Israel, I haven't been there in 31 years, but I know that because the team name were cheaper.
Shiva.
It's cheaper. I couldn't touch it because it's not my. Maybe speak to our chef. I was surprised because I thought it was my team name because theirs were much bigger, much cheaper.
It's true, for sure. So the person who sells me a Esrogim likes to say, he says, I sell a Esrogim. He says, I don't know what everybody else sells, but I sell a Esrogim. So the people who keep their Esrogei Teiman, they're very stark. They're very serious about that it's the right one. Obviously, everyone should follow their Masorah, their traditions. They have more than enough broad shoulders to rely on between the Chazon Ish and everybody else. But at least we have an understanding when we walk into the Esrog store, what we're picking up, why it has a Hechsher, and why the Hechsher is so important.